Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on QR Calgary and More Than Money. Faisal, we talk, you know, as money managers, we probably spend as much time counseling people on their lifestyle and their anxiety around money and longevity of it and what they're going to do with it. It's fascinating.
You know, it's interesting when you talk to Canadians and they'll look at their situation. They'll always say to us, if I just had more money,
right,
life would be easier. Right. If I just had more.
Everybody says it, right?
Everybody says it, regardless of how much money they have.
Yeah.
Right? It's unbelievable the amount of times we keep on hearing, well, if I just had an additional $200,000, $500,000, $1 million. Yeah. And then we ask, well, then what are you going to do with that extra money? If you had an additional $500,000 in your portfolio, what would that do for you? And then the response is, I don't know, I just feel better.
Yeah, I feel, yeah.
I just feel
It's not better. That they would do anything with it, but it's a comfort thing, right?
Yeah.
It's a slush fund or, you know, whatever word you
want.
So
I want more money. And then when the markets have their volatility, they start to react even more. They start checking online to their accounts a lot more. They have a whole bunch of different issues that come up. And of course, you and I are pretty good at the money management side.
Yep.
Not bad at helping people with their anxieties.
Right.
But we're not
counselors.
We're not experts.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. All right. But we know somebody that is, thankfully. Yeah. Right. We've got Andrea McTagg, who's founder of Shift Grit Psychology and Counseling, joining us today. Andrea, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
All right. So we gave you a bit of a run up there, but let's talk just a little bit about the idea of anxiety and money in general terms, and then we can dig into a couple of things. But what do you see in your practice with this idea of people transitioning into retirement and then the anxiety that they're feeling around the loss of a paycheck or the money they have?
100%. I think we're seeing more and more money woes come up in the practice in general. And my particular niche, like I said, is high net worth individuals. And I think they kind of fall into two categories. There are those who cannot save, which we hear a lot more about in media and so on and so on. But there's another segment that I see of those who cannot spend. So they've spent their whole life amassing some wealth, putting it like, you know, making sure that it's invested correctly, all of these things. And then they get into kind of a scarcity complex that doesn't allow them to touch that. And then they get that, I need more, lots of panic. And it starts to affect not only them, but spills out into their familial relationships as well. So we talk a lot about what to do with it, how to get rid of that. So we found some tricks with that. But yeah, it's definitely increasing, especially in the wake of all the inflationary environment and some stuff going on currently.
So Andrea, let me walk you through a scenario here, because this is something that we hear quite a bit with our clients, with listeners and viewers of the show. The reluctance to spend money on certain things. Let me put you through an example. We have clients of ours who are impaired mobility-wise. They can go and get surgery done, or they can wait 2 years in line in the Alberta medical system, or they can spend $15,000 and go get it done in other parts of the country, out-of-pocket expense. And the reluctance to spend that $15,000, when we query, why don't you just take the $15,000? Your financial plan says you're okay. You're not going to, you know, lose anything. We've done better than we expected in the portfolio. You've made surprise money, let's call it that. But no, they don't want to spend that extra bucks. Or when they start aging, they don't want to start paying for that additional quality of care because it's an actual cost to them. Why do people have that viewpoint? And then what is the tips or tricks to get them out of that funk?
I guess. Okay. So why people have that viewpoint? Because everything that you're telling them is very logical and they probably agree with you. There is enough money there. It makes sense. You know, you've done the percentages, you'll be fine well into your 90s or later or whatever. What we're seeing, though, is when you talk to somebody about the facts and the logic, you're talking to the specific part of our brain that is designed for that. So our executive functioning, our nice evolved brain. However, there's a whole other part of our brain that comes from our early self, our pre-evolutionary brain. It's the one that registers threats. And sometimes those ones do not correlate. They don't talk really well to each other. And if money itself has become a trigger, or the concept of like running out has become a trigger, then what it does is it activates that threat brain. And then that's the one making the decisions. And that guy doesn't do any delayed gratification. It doesn't do any planning. It's not where values live. It doesn't do any of the logic. It purely exists on that ugh feeling, like the thought of spending that $15,000 to go get the hip surgery or whatever and get a better quality of life. It just makes it grossed out. And that is the same part of the brain that does that fight, flight, or freeze. So with money, we see often it's a freeze because they're not running away. They're just freezing. I'm not going to do it. They might agree with you even in the conversation. And then you're like, okay, so did you book it? Like, are you going to call the doctor? And just nothing happens. So what we want to do is go in and deactivate money being binned as a threat and or activating that scarcity construct. And that can come up for a whole range of reasons. A lot of my entrepreneurial clients, they maybe didn't grow up with so much. So the concept of having this abundance that they enjoy now is not permanent for them, even though there's such an amount that you're like, the likelihood statistically that you would lose it all is extremely low. But that's not what they're, what we call the walnut brain or the threat brain is experiencing. It's like, you better hoard it because it might be gone tomorrow. Same sort of thing with different activators of threat or status or anything like that, because money is such a rich environment for triggers of all kinds. So that's what's happening when they're not making those logical decisions with it. And we're faced with that kind of impulsive, emotional kind of construct instead.
So let's address that because I think it is quite true, right? It's emotional versus logical. Logically, people can understand it. So Andrea, if you're facing that, if there's a listener or a viewer of this right now, and they're feeling that stress, but logically they know they've got enough money, the plan says they're fine, what are some of the things that they can do to try to eliminate this stress, allow them to free up to, you know, free up spending some of that money on lifestyle and things that, you know, that are important to them?
So there's a couple of things. Like, obviously what we do is we take them into therapy and we go, okay, what is the threat there? Because if you can identify what the threat is, that's the first step to removing it. So the threat is maybe something, a belief like I'm at risk, or it's going to go away, or if it's gone, then I'm irrelevant, whatever, whatever. So we'll identify first, what is the belief structure that's causing money to be binned as a threat? That's like level one. And then the next thing is, once we've got that, then there's a couple things that we can do in the realm of therapy land where we desensitize that threat, right? And I like to use the analogy of, if you have kind of a rescue dog and he's afraid of, my bird is afraid of suitcases. You don't go and put the suitcase right near them. They'll just freak out and freeze. You kind of slowly introduce it to them. So with me, that was moving the suitcase forward and forward and forward. So you don't want to get them to start spending on a giant thing. Why don't you buy a big vacation house? Why don't you buy a brand new, I'm always teasing my dad because he has this too. Why don't you go stop by the Merc dealership on the way home? Those purchases, way too big, way too daunting. You want to incrementally move the needle. So maybe it's just buying a really, really nice tailored shirt that they wouldn't have splurged on before. And then you kind of move it like that. And then they'll get there. It desensitizes them. And like I said, there's different things you can do to speed that up in therapy land. But the first part is identify what the threat is and then make it this small bite-sized chunks that people can actually apply. Because sometimes what we see as like, oh yeah, that would be logical to spend on, is way too big of a challenge at that time.
I think that makes sense, right? Because people think of these sort of digitally, right? I've got to go and spend $15,000 or $30,000 right away on the knee. And if they haven't done that before, right, you can see how that, they just freeze, right?
Yeah, and I have another question that comes up a lot in conversations with clients is, they're reluctant to spend on themselves, but they have no problem spending on their adult financially secure children. And I'm saying that specifically because if your child isn't problems financially, something, I have a different viewpoint of that, but there's a lot of our clients who are like, I want my kid to have a better home, or I want them to, you know, put money for their future. So I'm going to help and fund that. But when it comes to taking care of themselves, they don't do that. Now, just to give you an idea, we only have about 45 seconds left before we have to go. So just from the perspective, what's happening in the brain there, and what are the tips?
It's a similar sort of thing. The belief just changes, though, from something like I'm at risk. It changes to something like I'm worthless. So the dysfunctional need for that one is I need to provide value. So they're getting their worth construct made by giving. But it's not going to work the same by taking, because, of course, when we take something, we're not the one providing value. So we can't kind of create an equilibrium to that feeling of worthlessness. Same sort of thing with like, I'm not good enough. I have to be exceptional. I'm an exceptional dad if I buy her house, put her down payment down, etc. So when you can get those beliefs out of people's heads, then they start to interact with it from their logic brain, which is completely capable and should be the one in charge when it comes to money.
All right, Andrea, thank you. We've quickly run out of time on a topic that we could spend hours on. I appreciate you taking some time and sharing some insights with us.
No worries. Thank you for having me on.
All right. We've been joined by Andrea McTagg, who's the founder of Shift Grit Psychology and Counseling. My friend, we have got to make all of this make sense, including the psychology of spending money at our upcoming seminar.
Yeah, on July 16th, 7 p.m. at the Silver Springs Golf and Country Club. You need to register. So go to morethanmoneyradio.com.
Homelessness appears to be on the increase. And how is homelessness going to affect you in retirement? And it may do that through higher taxes. Join us after the break on that. You're on QR Calgary and More Than Money.